Welcome to the deep dive.
Mm.
So we've got some really interesting material. You shared this article by Rob Van Linde about really boosting tabletop exercises with something called liberating structures.
That's right.
And just for anyone maybe not totally familiar, a tabletop exercise is, well, it's basically a practice run, isn't it? Like a simulation.
Exactly, yeah. Often used in areas like cybersecurity, but really anywhere you need to test plans. You walk through a what-if scenario.
Just see how the team or organization holds up. Find the kinks in the plan.
Mm-hmm. Figure out who does what. Make sure people are actually ready for, you know, a real event.
Right. But the article makes a really good point. These traditional exercises, sometimes they don't quite get everyone's input.
Yeah, that's a common pitfall. You might have like two or three dominant voices, maybe.
But other people might just, you know, hold back.
Yeah.
Not feel they can jump in.
Precisely. Or their ideas just don't get heard. And that's where these liberating structures are supposed to help. They're not just like asking people to talk more. They're actual specific methods, facilitation techniques designed to make participation more inclusive, get more ideas out there.
So it's a structured way to get broader input.
Exactly. So I think our mission for this deep dive is really to get under the hood of these structures, understand how they work, and crucially, how you can combine them.
Combine them. Okay.
Yeah, how combining them strategically makes these tabletop exercises, well, much more powerful.
All right, let's unpack that. So the first big thing seems to be just getting more people involved, enhance participation. And the article really stresses this. How does that actually change things in an exercise?
Well, think about a standard meeting sometimes.
Mm.
A few people do most of the talking, right?
Mm. Happens all the time.
Liberating structures. They use specific steps to sort of actively pull input from everybody. It's not just about being nice. It's about getting all the knowledge that's actually in the room out onto the table.
So you get a richer picture of the situation.
A much richer picture, yeah. More complete understanding because you're hearing from experiences and viewpoints you might otherwise miss entirely.
That makes a lot of sense because if you only hear from, say, the IT lead and the comms lead.
You're missing huge pieces. What about logistics or legal or customer support? They all see the problem differently.
Right, which ties into the next point. The article makes the power of different viewpoints. Why is that diversity so vital here?
Well, complex problems rarely have simple answers, do they? Think about a crisis, a system failure, maybe.
Yeah.
Your tech team sees the code, the servers. Your PR team sees the public reaction. Your legal team sees the liability. They have different priorities, different expertise.
And potentially conflicting views sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. But you need all those views. Liberating structures help create that space where those different perspectives can actually, you know, meet and inform each other. It's not just hearing them in isolation.
It's the interaction between them that sparks new insights.
Exactly. You spot blind spots you wouldn't see otherwise.
Yeah.
You build a more holistic response plan.
Okay, so more people contributing, bringing unique perspectives, that logically leads to better problem solving, right? How do these structures actually help teams come up with, well, better solutions, more innovative ones?
It's about moving past that sort of free-for-all brainstorming.
Yeah.
You know, where maybe the first idea or the loudest voice wins.
Yeah, that can happen.
Structures like 1-2-4-all, which we can talk more about, they build in quiet time. Individual reflection first.
Ah, okay. So you think before you talk.
Right. Everyone gets to form their own thoughts before the group dynamic kicks in.
Yeah.
That tends to bring out a wider range of ideas, often more original ones, because people aren't immediately swayed by the first few suggestions.
That's interesting. Avoids that initial groupthink.
Okay. So you mentioned combining structures. The article stresses moving beyond just using one.
Mm.
What's the real gain there? Why layer them?
Well, think of it like tools. One liberating structure is like a good screwdriver.
Yeah.
Useful.
But combining them is like having the whole toolbox. Different structures do different things. Some are great for generating ideas.
Like the 1-2-4, all you mentioned.
Exactly. Others are better for digging deeper into specific problems or for prioritizing or getting targeted advice. Combining them gives you flexibility.
Flexibility too.
What?
Adapt as you go.
Yeah, adapt to what the group needs or how the scenario is unfolding in the exercise. You might start broad, then need to focus, then need some really specific feedback. A sequence of structures lets you do that purposefully.
And I guess it keeps things more interesting, too. Stops it feeling repetitive.
Oh, definitely. Workshop fatigue is real, right? Switching the way people interact keeps the energy up, keeps them engaged.
Right.
Plus, different structures pull out different kinds of thinking, different kinds of feedback. So layering them gives you a much more thorough exploration of the topic.
Okay, let's get concrete. The article gives examples. One combo is 1-2-4-all, followed by something called Troika Consulting. Tell us about 1-2-4-all. For how does that work?
Sure. 1-2-4-all is it's really elegant for getting broad input pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You pose a question like, what's our biggest vulnerability in this scenario?
Yeah.
First, the one, everyone thinks about it silently, maybe jots down notes, just for a minute or two.
Individual reflection.
Right. Then the two, they pair up, discuss their ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Then the four, two pairs get together, so groups of four, share insights, find common themes.
Building on each other's ideas.
Exactly. And finally, the all, each group of four shares its key takeaways with the whole room. So you go from individual thoughts to shared understanding very efficiently.
I can see how that gets everyone's voice in, at least initially, and minimizes the chance of someone dominating early on.
Precisely. That silent start is key.
Okay, so you've generated ideas with 1-2-4-all. Then the article suggests Troika Consulting. What's that?
Troika Consulting is for getting, like, targeted advice. After 1-2-4-all, maybe people have identified specific challenges they're facing related to this scenario. How do I handle this communication, or what's the best way to approach that technical issue?
Okay, personal sticking points.
Exactly. So people get into groups of three. One person is the client with the challenge. The other two are consultants.
Right.
The client quickly explains their problem. The consultants ask clarifying questions just to make sure they get it.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and this is important, the client turns around, listens silently.
Listens silently.
Yep. While the two consultants discuss the challenge and offer advice, ideas, suggestions to each other, as if the client isn't there.
Oh, interesting. So the client just absorbs the advice without defending or reacting immediately.
Exactly. It lets them really hear different perspectives without feeling defensive. It's surprisingly powerful for getting unstuck on specific issues that came up during the broader brainstorm.
Huh. That's a neat transition from broad ideas to specific help.
Huh.
Okay, another combo mention, starting with appreciative inquiry, then using open space technology. Appreciative inquiry first focusing on strengths. Why start there?
Yeah, appreciative inquiry flips the usual script.
Uh-huh.
Instead of starting with, what are all the problems? You start by asking things like, think about a time we handled a similar challenge really well. What made it work?
Mm-hmm.
Or what are our core strengths when it comes to this kind of situation?
So focusing on the positive, on what works.
Right. The idea is that groups move towards what they focus on.
Right.
Starting with successes and strengths builds positive energy, confidence, a sense of shared capability, creates a more constructive atmosphere before you even get to the challenges.
So that's a different tone than just diving into weaknesses. Okay, makes sense. And then open space technology builds on that. How does that work?
Open space is pretty radical for some groups. After you've built that positive foundation, you basically let the participants create the agenda themselves.
They create the agenda.
Yeah. Anyone who has an issue or a topic related to the exercise that they feel passionate about, that they want to discuss further, they write it down, announce it, and post it on a wall, suggesting a time and place. These become the breakout sessions. And then people just go to whichever session interests them most. It's called the law of 2 feet. If you're not learning or contributing in one session, you use your 2 feet and go find another one where you can.
Wow. So it's completely self-organizing based on what people actually care about in that moment.
Exactly. It taps into the intrinsic motivation and energy in the room. People dive deep into the topics that they think are most important, following on from the positive start. It can lead to some really unexpected, powerful conversations and actions.
That sounds really dynamic. Okay, this is great stuff. But for someone listening, thinking, okay, I want to try this, combining these structures, it sounds like it needs careful planning.
Right.
What are the key steps for actually doing it successfully?
Absolutely. Planning is key. The article hits on this. First, and maybe most importantly, be crystal clear on your objectives for the tabletop exercise itself. What are you really trying to test or improve?
Know your goal before you pick your tools.
Precisely. Your objectives guide everything else. Once you know the why, then you select the liberating structures that actually serve those objectives.
Matching the structure to the purpose.
Mm-hmm. Don't just pick ones that sound cool. Think, do I need idea generation? Prioritization, deep problem solving, choose structures that fit the task.
Right. Then what? The sequence matters, you said.
Yes. The sequence is critical. How do the structures flow together? Does one naturally lead into the next? You want to build momentum? Maybe start broad, then focus, then plan action. Think about a logical progression.
Like building blocks.
Okay.
And timing. That seems tricky.
It is. You need to allocate enough time for each structure to actually work. You know, don't rush people through reflection or deep discussion, but also keep things moving.
Fine line.
It is.
Yeah.
Clear time boxing for each step within a structure is crucial. The facilitator needs to manage that actively but gently. Better to slightly overestimate than underestimate time, usually.
And that brings us to the facilitator. Their role seems pretty vital here.
Oh, absolutely essential. They need to explain each structure clearly, the purpose, the steps, the timing, guide the transition smoothly.
Keep everyone on the same page.
Exactly. And importantly, create that safe space. Make sure people feel comfortable sharing maybe unconventional ideas without being shot down. That psychological safety is key.
Okay. One last point the article makes. Getting feedback afterwards, why is that loop important?
Because you won't get it perfect the first time. Asking participants what worked well, what was confusing, what was most valuable. That feedback is gold.
For improving next time.
Absolutely. It helps you refine your choices of structures, your sequencing, your timing, your own facilitation. It makes the whole process iterative and helps you get better and better at using these tools to boost readiness.
This has been really illuminating. So if we boil it down, the main takeaway is that using these liberating structures, and especially combining them thoughtfully, can really transform a tabletop exercise.
Yeah, it moves it from potentially just, you know, going through the motions.
Right, or a passive lecture.
Exactly. Into something truly dynamic, collaborative, and frankly, much more insightful. You tap into the collective intelligence way more effectively.
Which ultimately means the organization is better prepared.
That's the goal. Better readiness through better engagement and smarter collaboration.
Okay, so final thought then for everyone listening. We've talked a lot about diverse perspectives and active participation in these exercises, but where else, maybe in your work or even outside of work, could similar techniques be useful?
Good question.
Where else could structuring conversations differently, making sure more voices are heard, actually unlock some new insights or better solutions, something to think about beyond just the formal exercises? Thanks for diving deep with us today.